Competition figures in two new movies in very different ways. 21 is about college students trying to beat the odds in Las Vegas. And Run, Fat Boy, Run is about a man trying to beat a romantic rival in a marathon. Bob Mondello says that, this being Hollywood, everybody wins, except maybe the audience.
21 is about a boyishly brilliant math student who's invited to join some other collegiate brainiacs in an extracurricular activity. It involves the world's most popular card game, blackjack.
It's a game with memory. Cards drawn are the past, ones to come are future.
And the best part? It's beatable.
Are you talking about counting cards?
No, I'm talking about getting very, very rich.
Actually, they are talking about counting cards, and for the next 90 minutes or so, that's what they're going to do, accompanied by much snapping of aces on green felt and urgent electronic swooshes, unfortunately using a system that's basically impenetrable.
10 counts plus 15. 8 still plus 15. 9 plus 15. 5.
Can I split those?
Now, I don't know. Maybe this is thrilling, and I'm just not getting it. Certainly, there's an attractive young cast, and card counting being frowned upon by casinos, there are disguises involved, not to mention Lawrence Fishburne and Kevin Spacey snarling a lot, which lends a bit of tension. Because the director knows there's a limit to how exciting he can make the sight of cards being turned over, most of the film is taken up with explaining what's happening, or is going to happen, or has just happened, which may be enough to keep audiences from heading for the nearest slot machine, but at best, 21 is a sort of collegiate Ocean 16 with dimmer stars and less oomph. Run, Fat Boy, Run, on the other hand, feels like a souped-up sitcom, which makes a certain amount of sense as it's directed by former Friends actor David Schwimmer. The premise is that an out-of-shape London security guard decides the way to win back the affections of a bride he once left standing pregnant at the altar is to run a marathon against her rich, new, marathon-running American boyfriend. Simon Pegg is the runaway groom, Hank Azaria, the rich, new runner.
Libby tells me that you decided to run the marathon?
Yeah.
That's great, man. Seriously. You ever run a marathon before?
No, why?
It's pretty grueling.
Well, yeah, that's why they call it a marathon.
Yeah, actually, technically, it's called a marathon because of the events of 490 BC. There was a Greek soldier named Phaethon.
Can I just stop you there?
Yeah.
I've got nothing to say. I just wanted to stop you there.
Simon Pegg is an appealing leading man, and he's been given a couple of sitcom-worthy sidekicks to help him through a training regimen that leads, inevitably perhaps, to much ado about blisters.
You're going to have to pop it.
No way. Never pop another man's pustule.
Well, I'll do it then. Give me the needle.
It's fine. I sterilized it.
In what?
It's sterilized.
Stick it in.
Pop it!
I can't!
Why not?
It's scary!
Give it to me.
Just do it slow. Do it gently,
yeah,
okay?
Right, we'll trust me.
After three, okay?
Okay.
One.
Like I said, sitcom writ large. Run, Fat Boy, Run trots amiably past its plot points and also past its graceful leading lady, Tandy Newton, who never breaks a sweat, to an overlong, overblown marathon finale with an overprominent Nike plug. Schwimmer's direction is pedestrian, but then it's not his fault that the material is kind of lame. I'm Bob Mondello.
Nine years after Kimberly Pierce's acclaimed independent first film, Boys Don't Cry, the director teamed up with Paramount and MTV Films to make the new drama Stop Loss. The title refers to the government policy, invoked during times of war, that keeps soldiers in the military past the date when their service was supposed to end. The film stars Ryan Phillippe, Abby Cornish, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Film critic David Edelstein has a review.
At first glance, Kimberly Pierce's Stop Loss doesn't bear much resemblance to her momentous debut, Boys Don't Cry, the story of a young woman who pretends joyfully to be a man, and when she's discovered, is raped and murdered. But the films are connected. Pierce has a knack for getting inside the heads of young men, for illuminating their bonds and rituals in a way that should be the envy of male directors. Last year's Iraq and War on Terror movies tanked, and you wouldn't know this is a political film from the posters, which feature four young people staring into the camera like John Hughes characters contemplating the senior prom. But in a sometimes live wire, sometimes ungainly way, Stop Loss evokes the pain of young American cowboy types who've lost all sense of autonomy. The movie centers on three Texas soldiers, good old boys, who return from Iraq right after an ambush that left some of their buddies dead and maimed, and another grimly stoic after inadvertently killing women and children. That's the opening sequence, and Pierce makes you understand the adrenaline-fueled hyper-awareness of these men at a checkpoint as they almost fire on a family speeding toward them, then the unreality of the moment when insurgents in another speeding car suddenly open fire on them. They make split-second and not too wise decisions as the insurgents melt into civilian crowds. And when it's all over and they roll into Texas on a bus, ready to be discharged, you get a palpable sense of how wound up they are, how they're itching to get very, very drunk and have crazy sex and court oblivion. They barely make it through the parade and the welcome speech of a U.S. senator before they're throwing back shots and retching and punching people out. The first night home, Tommy, played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt, gets thrown out by his wife. Steve, played by Channing Tatum, backhands his fiancée, Michelle, played by Abby Cornish, and begins to dig a trench in the yard while screaming he's under fire. Brandon, played by Ryan Phillippe, seems the most stable until he goes back on the base to get his discharge papers.
Says here you have orders to report to the 1st Brigade.
Not me. I'm getting out today.
Brandon Leonard King?
Yes.
Out to the 1st Brigade on the 22nd.
This is a mistake.
It's all there. You leave on the 22nd, shipping back to Iraq. Subsection 12305, Title 10, by the authority of the president. You've been stop lost.
Ryan Phillippe has never struck me as much of an actor, but in Stop Loss, he's very impressive, convincingly edgy and disoriented. He tells his commanding officer no, he's not going back. He punches out two guards. He goes AWOL. He can't believe what's happening, and neither can his mother, played by Linda Emmon, and his pal Steve's fiancée, Michelle.
They stop lost you. How can they do this?
They're doing whatever they want to do. With a shortage of guys and no draft, they're shipping back soldiers who're supposed to be getting out. It's a backdoor draft is what it is.
What about Steve?
Mitch, I don't know. Some of us are getting it, some ain't.
This cannot be happening. No, you almost died over there. What do you want to do? You want me to take you to Mexico till this blows over?
No. Out of the question, Mom. I ain't dragging my tail across to Mexico.
I'll take you.
Michelle does drive him. Not to Mexico, but to Washington, where he hopes the senator who once promised him the world will stop the stop loss. It's during Michelle and Brandon's road trip that stop loss loses momentum. There's lots of talk and lots of shots of their car going over bridges. But this is the bitter core of the film, and it should be crawly and discomforting. A visit to the family of a dead comrade, to their hospitalized buddy, Rico, played by Victor Razzak, who's blind and has lost one arm and two legs, and to a fleabag motel where another AWOL stop-loss soldier hides with his wife and sick child. The young Australian actress Abby Cornish makes Michelle, potentially a thankless role, a vivid observer. She's struggling to understand what Iraq and stop-loss, a changing of the rules in midstream, means to men who thought in war you knew who the bad guys were, and when you were out, you were out. Brandon has no real recourse, and Pierce has no answers. The power of the film, and this is no joke, is that it shows him between Iraq and a hard place.
David Edelstein is film critic for New York Magazine.
The The government of Iran is responding to a different film. It's called Persepolis, from the graphic novel of the same name, nominated for an Academy Award this year for Best Animated Feature. It's the story of a girl who grows up in the tumultuous years of the Islamic Revolution in Iran and her struggles to find her identity. Iran's government has condemned the film, but it is widely available on bootleg DVDs on the streets of the capital. NPR's Mike Schuster has more from Tehran.
Persepolis is a rare animated film. It is about adults and how history affects a family. In Tehran in 1978, hundreds of thousands of people are in the streets, calling for the end of the Iranian monarchy. Marjan is a little girl, and she and her family are swept up in the turbulent events. The Shah falls, the Islamic Revolution takes hold, and war breaks out between Iran and Iraq. The events in Persepolis are familiar to viewers in Tehran. 35-year-old Mohammed says he was surprised at the impact Persepolis had on him. Mohammed prefers to use his first name only because watching the film on DVD is officially prohibited by the government. Mohammed got a copy from a friend and watched it with his wife.
We could really touch it and feel it, and we could really understand it and absorb it. That was the reason that we really enjoyed the movie.
Stylistically, Persepolis is an unusual animated film. It is drawn in a flat style, in stark black and white, very much like the drawings in Marjan Satrapi's graphic novel from which the film was adapted. But the animation in Persepolis is anything but simple, says Niloufar, who is 25 and who also prefers to use only her first name.
I really like the technique of the film because it's sort of like putting away the Disney cliches. It was in a way a combination of Eastern theatrical style with, I don't know, modern Western films.
In the film, to protect Marjan from the Iraqi bombs and missiles, her parents sent her to Europe and safety. But the young teenager cannot adapt. She falls sick and must return to Tehran. In Iran, she is unable to conform to the changing political culture. She turns punk, champions heavy metal rock, challenges the Islamic dogma of her teachers, and later falls into a deep depression.
I can see the same thing she has saw.
Niloufar says she and her friends have gone through some of the same experiences that young Marjan did in the film.
The moral police still bothers you or say, why do you wear this kind of uniform?
Selling Persepolis on DVD is officially prohibited, but it is not hard to find. Viewers like Niloufar and Mohammed say it's not dangerous to watch it, in part because it's in French. The authorities do not believe it is going to have a huge impact, says Mohammed.
Only sometimes you can find it with a Persian subtitle. They say, well, the number of the people who can have access to it and watch it and understand it, there will be a very limited people.
Although Iran's government officially condemned the film, especially after it won a prize at Cannes last year, Tehran's municipal government allowed two showings in February. They were held in cultural centers rather than in large cinemas, and several scenes were cut for sexual content. The version on the street is uncensored. Mohammed found himself surprisingly wrapped up in Marjan's struggle.
For this person who comes back again after a couple of years to Iran, still it's very difficult to adapt yourself with the situation that still was going on in Iran. That's why maybe the reason that for her was difficult to find her way.
In the film, eventually Marjan pulls herself together and struggles to assert her individuality in a society that appears to have no interest in individual identity. But her parents fear that her behavior could land her in prison, and they persuade her to leave Iran again, this time for Paris, where the film changes its style.
She showed all the decades in Iran in black and white. And when she finally went to Paris, it was all bright and colored.
Niloufar has mixed feelings about the message here. She doesn't believe it's still all black and white in Iran.
I think it's really changed. Although there is not much liberty in some areas, but I think they recognize some of the, I don't know, rights, some of the women's rights.
Still, the end gives a feeling of hope, Niloufar says, adding, she wishes Persepolis had won the Oscar. Mike Schuster, NPR News, Tehran. ¶¶
And this is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. If you're so inclined, you can go on the internet today and watch a controversial short film that criticizes Islam and the Quran. The online film is called Fitna, which is an Arabic word meaning strife. And it opens with a cartoon image of the Prophet Muhammad, one of the images that sparked protests around the world 2 years ago. The memory of those protests may give you some idea why the government of the Netherlands, where this film comes from, is not at all happy about its release. The film shows violent images of terrorist attacks interspersed with verses from the Quran. The producer of this film is a member of the Netherlands Parliament. His name is Geerts Wilders. He's the leader of a small nationalist party, and he's warned of what he calls a tsunami of Islamization coming to Europe. And the film concludes with a message from the filmmaker. As you hear the sounds of Tchaikovsky's Arabian Dance, you see words warning that, quote, Islam seeks to destroy our Western civilization. The Dutch government says it regrets that Wilders released this film at all. Christian Kroner is the Dutch ambassador to the United States.
There is a right of religion, and there's a right to the freedom of speech. There is no such thing as the right to insult people.
Did your government urge Mr. Wilders not to release this film at all?
Absolutely. Not only did they urge him not to show this film, but they also pointed to his responsibility, both as a politician and as an individual.
He's getting a lot of publicity out of this, isn't he?
Absolutely. Worldwide.
Are you concerned that by campaigning against him in this fashion that you're getting him even more publicity?
No, because it is the responsibility of the government to lead to a situation where we have continued peaceful dialogue within our country and where we prevent this subject to become an international issue like the one we have seen with the Danish cartoons. And we have to take this seriously.
That's Christian Kroner, the Netherlands ambassador to the United States, speaking yesterday in Washington. So far, reaction to the film has been muted. And last night, the Dutch prime minister said, quote, the government is heartened by the initial restrained reactions of Dutch Muslims.
So, as we said, Stop Loss is the focus of a new movie out today called just that, Stop Loss. And we heard an explanation of the real-life implications of this policy on U.S. troops. But all of that aside, is this something we want to go spend our $11 on this weekend? Here to help answer that question and talk through all the other movie gems out the next couple of days is the friend of the BPP and Metro film critic Daniel Holloway in studio.
Good morning,
hi, Dan.
Good morning, people.
Thanks for being here. So we just heard the real-life explanation of Stop Loss itself from Washington Post reporter Ann Scott Tyson. You heard that, Daniel, that interview. Does that jibe with how the film characterizes the policy?
For the most part, yeah. The film basically revolves around Ryan. I can never get
Felipe.
His name right.
Felipe.
Yeah.
Felipe.
Ryan.
Ryan.
Ryan plays Sergeant King, and he gets Stop Lost, but the rest of his unit is going back. Except for another friend of his who's another sergeant I won't give anything away. But basically, it's not his entire unit that's getting sent back. It's him himself. Uh-huh. And I guess the reasoning is that he's trained and served with these guys, and they need him to be an effective leader. This is compounded by the fact that he got some people killed and doesn't really think he's an effective leader right now. So
I think we've got a little bit from this scene. Here is a scene with Ryan Phillippe where he's just learned he's been called back into the military.
They stop lost you. How can they do this?
They're doing whatever they want to do. With a shortage of guys and no draft, they're shipping back soldiers who're supposed to be getting out. It's a backdoor draft is what it is.
What about Steve?
Mitch, I don't know. Some of us are getting it, some ain't.
This cannot be happening. No, you almost died over there. What do you want to do? You want me to take you to Mexico till this blows over?
No. Out of the question, Mom. I ain't dragging my tail across to Mexico.
I'll take you.
So, is this an anti-war film? I mean, we've seen a few of these come and go over the past year. Some have not been so successful. Was that your takeaway from this? And if so, is it successful?
It's definitely an anti-war film in the sense that it doesn't really address the issue of whether or not we should be in Iraq at all. It's addressing the issue of how the war is being prosecuted. Whether or not it's doing that effectively, I think, is up for debate because the film, as you said earlier, is highly stylized. It's an MTV movie, which I know you shouldn't read too much into what production house is making a film, but it's hard not to make that connection when the welcome home party that these guys get near the film's beginning basically involves, I live in New York. There's more beautiful women here than there are just about any place else in the country. But I mean, these guys are surrounded by what looks like backup dancers in short shorts and low cut tops and little pink cowboy hats. And I've never been to Texas, so I can't really say, but it doesn't seem like a realistic representation of any place in America.
And the movie posters, it does look kind of MTV teen video kind. You know, they're slung on the car front.
But it is directed by the woman who directed Boys Don't Cry,
yeah,
right? I mean, she's...
Kimberly Pierce, yeah. I had high hopes for this film, as a matter of fact, for that reason. This is her first movie in 10 years. And
her brother's in Iraq or something?
I think it's her younger half-brother is serving.
Oh, okay. I wasn't aware of that.
So you think she does a good job? I mean, you had high hopes?
I had high hopes, and I think the movie is... look, I think more people will see it than saw In the Valley of Ella. Mm-hmm. I think the reason for that is that this film is so stylized, that the actors are so good-looking. Mm-hmm. Phillippe and Channing Tatum. Channing Tatum is just like, he looks like a professional wrestler
ripped.
In this film,
yeah.
You know? You know, everybody's very good looking. Everybody is like hip and young. And
so that takes away from the realism of it.
It takes away
bit.
From the realism, but it might get butts in the seat. So you're a little torn over that. It's watchable. It's a decent film. It's not as good as In the Valley of Ella was, but probably more people will see it.
Okay, we're going to switch gears. Dramatically, run, fat boy, run.
Comically.
Before we get to your review, your take on this, we're going to play a one-line review from our own Auxiliary Holloway. Here's what your wife, Daniel Holloway's wife, Heidi, had to say about this film.
It seems like a movie that David Schwimmer directed because he did.
We love that so much. Please expound. What does Heidi mean here?
I just summed it up better than I ever could. David Schwimmer directed Run, Fat Boy, Run from a script written by Michael Ian Black and then I believe rewritten over that by Simon Pegg. It's a very middle-of-the-road comedy, unfortunately. If you're a Simon Pegg fan, you're used to films like Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead, these, you know, really some of the best comedies to come out in the last few years. This is a much more mainstream affair. It's a romantic comedy in with all the vanilla that is implied by that.
Is Simon the fat boy who is running?
Yes, he
is.
Why
is he running?
He's running because he's in love with Thandi Newton, but he left her at the altar years ago while she was pregnant.
Dumb man. That
yes,
lady is
yes.
good looking. Let's listen. To prove Heidi's point, we've chosen the David Schwimmerist clip we could find from this.
Libby, I never actually thanked you.
For what?
Well, for... just sort of let me back into your life.
Jake's life.
I wouldn't have been surprised if you just cut me off completely, you know.
Oh, now you tell me.
Well, no, I mean...
Now he needs his dad.
Yeah. You were right, you know, about me entering the marathon. It was because I was... sort of trying to win you back kind of thing. And I'd always kind of hoped that maybe we'd, you know, get back together and that. But, you know, when I saw you with Wit...
Des.
And I know it's the height of hypocrisy. And I know doing this isn't going to change anything or make anything better, but, I settle for your respect.
Oh, man, that is like... woof. A minute too much.
Yeah,
here's the thing. That wasn't even a minute, according to my
that felt like 45 minutes.
Shouldn't there have been a joke in there, you know? Shouldn't there have been a fart noise or something? It's kind of... And you don't ever believe that Thandi Newton would be with this guy. He's such a schlub. You know?
Okay, we do have to ask before moving on, how many of your reviews are actually your wife's reviews?
All of them.
All of them.
She writes them for me and then tells me what to say before I come here.
Awesome.
So she's saying, if you like David Schwimmer, it's a film for you.
That's what you can do this weekend. Okay, moving on. Priceless. It's in French, but do we have some of the English language trailer?
On the luxurious French Riviera.
Pardon, excusez-moi, pardon.
Jean was just a lowly hotel worker. And Irene was working the highlight. When a case of mistaken identity. A little deception. And a couple of cocktails turned their lives upside down.
Jean.
Okay, that's the idea. What do you think? What's your takeaway from this one?
Yeah, it's funny. I saw that trailer the other day. I don't see many trailers. It doesn't do the film justice at all. This,
oh, really?
Yeah, this and it's my two favorite movies so far since the new year are both screwball romantic comedies, this and Miss Pettigrew Lives for the Day. I love it. It's great. Audrey Tautou from Amelie in A Very Long Engagement.
Love her.
And a fella named Gad Elmaleh. I'm going to ruin this too. Gad Elmaleh, who's a Moroccan-born French comic actor.
Mm-hmm.
And she plays a gold digger who, through a series of misunderstandings, ends up having a brief affair with him. He's actually a hotel barman, but she thinks he's a millionaire. She gets caught. She's about to marry the rich guy she's been working on for 2 years, and he kicks her out. And so then they start spending time together, and she starts teaching him how to be a gold digger. He, like, lands a, you know, 50-year-old cougar, and then, you know, they fall in love, and there's all kinds of hijinks, but it's really good.
It's worth it? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. We're not going to hear a clip from this because we've run out of time. Too bad. But what do you think about the new one with Michael Caine and Demi Moore?
It'd be good if there wasn't for that whole Demi Moore part.
Yeah, Flawless, this is called, I believe, heist film?
Yeah, it's a heist film. She plays the first female executive at a British diamond company that is basically a stand-in for De Beers, and they're gonna steal some diamonds. And yeah, it's actually like a really nicely made film, but the Demi Moore performance is really extraordinarily problematic.
Really?
Yeah, she was walking around and with her face frozen and her power pumps on and her very tight, you know, 60s suit dresses, and it just doesn't, like, just sucks all the energy out of the room.
She was never as good as G.I. Jane. It was all downhill.
I know. It's been a steep slope since she shaved her head for G.I. Jane.
Daniel Holloway, thanks. Can we bring your wife in next time, too?
Yeah, definitely. Let's do it.
We liked her. Okay.
Because Siskel and Ebert.
We're going to go to the movies this weekend. You've convinced me there's at least something out there, I think, for everyone. Daniel Holloway, film critic for Metro Papers. Thanks, as always, Daniel.
Thanks, guys.
Coming up on the show, a conversation with the head of Rutgers women's basketball team. Vivian Stringer has a new book detailing her rise to head coach and the trials and tribulations once she got there. She'll speak with us next. This is the Bryant Park Project from NPR News.